A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Two Cups of Tea. I'm Chris Heath, and I have the best job in podcasting, because I get to stick the kettle on, crack open the saureen, and listen to another amazing life story from an older legend. And today I've finally found the right way to Oldham. Fails with an Oldham. I'm here to meet 82-year-old George Weir. His life story is a belter, starting in 1935 back in rural Northern Ireland. His tales feature wild donkeys, terrified chickens, unspeakable porridge, tin baths, skylights, first crushes with black eyes, and the love of his life. Right, so, I'll go in and set up the microphones and you listen to the cheesy theme tune. Let's go.
I was born there in 1935 in County Antrim at a place called Ballycastle Hospital.
Yeah.
I was born in hospital, I was born at home, and I'm one of 11.
One of 11?
Yeah.
Whereabouts are you in the 11? Whereabouts are you in the football team?
Well, I'm second. There's one more left now, and he's in Australia. That's why I go every year to see him. He's 18 months younger than me, and he's called Hugh. Hugh Weir.
Yeah.
I'm George, he's Hugh. We're the last two.
And you were one of 11. Can you take us through all 11 names?
I can, yeah.
What's the Weir roll call?
Well, number one was Samuel.
Yeah.
And number two was Jean. Number three was Molly.
Yeah.
Number four was Greta. So he's just died. She's died at 94. She lived to 94.
Wow.
So we're down to Greta.
Well, lovely name, Greta.
Yeah. Well, it's short for Margaret.
It's short
for Margaret. Right. Call him Greta.
Oh, I see.
And then we'll come to Bill.
Yeah.
My brother Bill. Now, if he was alive, he's 10 years older than me. All the time, he's 10 years older than me. And Bill, and then there's Daniel.
Yeah.
Not Daniel O'Donnell, Daniel. He was a good singer and all.
Was he?
I know, Daniel. Always sang at every party we were at. Absolute screamer, the fella. Lovely man.
So Danny was the singer, the life and soul.
Yes. And then there was Agnes.
Yeah.
And it's Bob. But in between Agnes and Bob, I had another sister called Grace, and she died of that. No, she was born with a hole in the heart. They could repair it.
Yes, now, yes,
and
yeah.
She died of that. So she died. I don't remember because I was
so little, yeah.
They tell me about it. I never seen her. We know photographs of her.
Sure.
And then along came Bob. And it's the last three books. There's Bob, Robert, who's called Robert John, and then there's George, and then there's Huey. That's the 11.
So Huey was the youngest?
Yeah, I'm the second.
So?
And Robert was the third.
Yeah.
Agnes was the fourth.
Yeah. What kind of part of County Antrim did you live? Was it rural?
It's so rural. If I took you to it, you'd think you were in Africa. It's just trees and land everywhere. And just cows and that. It's just at a place called, even this is where I was born,
yeah.
I brought up, Gortinui.
Gortinui.
Gortinui. You'd have to have a sat nav to fact. It's so rural. And when I say it's rural, there's Moss Side, the village of about 200 or 300 people live in it.
Yeah.
The church, that's where it was doing it.
So that's a little village, even on its own, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's 1 mile from where I am, and 1 mile the other way is Durbert, where I go every year to see my sister when she's alive.
Yeah.
I go, last year I went twice, because I went in the August after she was She was 94 last August.
And yeah.
Which I do every year go for her birthday.
Was that Greta?
Greta.
Yeah.
And of course, she died there in November, late November.
What's your earliest memory?
When we got a donkey, I remember. I always found the donkeys, and my dad got a donkey. But it's a wild one from the mountains of Mourne.
A wild donkey?
A wild donkey. It would have been only partly tamed. And we called it Jack. If it was a male, we called him Jack.
Yeah.
We called Jack. And that was, I remember that was very, only about 5 or 6, but we loved it. But it would have gone for you, it would have kicked you, you know, to be careful with it. Well, it put my sister and my half-sister.
Yeah.
Because we brought her up, my half-sister Wendy, and we brought her up, my mother and father.
Yeah.
You know, and she was brought up, and I look on her as my sister, Wendy. But one of the things I remember was, my dad used to graze it along the side of the road.
Yeah.
But Wendy, she was only, she'd just be toddling then, you know, but we were a bit old, we were playing football and all that type of
yeah.
school. And the big noise went up and went down, and my dad was kicking the donkey because he had to kick, it put her down, and she's still got the scars now, and it bit her face.
It bit her face?
It was a wild donkey.
Who shared what rooms? Because with 11 of you, where did you all sleep?
With Huey. That's kept with Huey.
Oh, what, you shared in you in, shared, and shared a bed?
Yeah.
And was that in one room, or there other with more of you in the same room?
In one room, it had three beds in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my sisters, someone went home, but my sisters slept. There was one room downstairs,
yeah.
And two sisters slept downstairs. And when they were at home, the others slept in the same, in the other room with my mother and father, and they slept in there.
Yeah.
There was a curtain between, you know, so it's only a small house. But we had the room with all the boys in. It didn't have any windows in, so what they had a skylight, and that was right over our bed, a skylight. When you went to bed at night, and they had to put a piece of... cloth around that my mum put a piece of cloth in case we hit it in the night, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like a big.
Oh, because if you stood up, you mean because if you stood up too quick, you'd wallop
it
yourself?
Like that, it was there. Like a big boxing glove on the end of it. I can see it there. And we lifted it up in a hot night.
It wasn't actually a boxing glove, was it?
Yeah, no, it made like a boxing glove. She should have put a boxing glove on it, but she just wrapped it around, you know.
Yeah.
And tied it so if you walked into it, you wouldn't hurt your head.
Yeah.
That was over the bed, over our bed. The other bed is another side, but all right. But there was no, but we had no winds to see out into the front, you know.
But when you were laying down at night, you could look up through the skylight at the stars.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That sounds quite lovely.
Yeah. And when they were bombing, I remember when they were bombing Belfast.
Yeah.
You could hear the planes, and we used to stand up and watch them going over, you know. We could see Belfast burning. It was one of about 40 miles from Belfast.
Yeah.
We could still see the flashes, you know, when they were bombing it, because it's been badly bombed. You know,
well, you knew it was about 6 or 7 or something then?
Yeah, well, I went up to, about 45.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
What were your mum and dad like?
Marvellous. My father thought the world of me because, you see, when I was 7, right, yeah. I got pneumonia, very bad. Now, today's way it'd be nothing, but there's no drugs then, and we lived in the country. I mean, the doctor was 8 miles away.
Yeah.
So they looked after me for the, well, it wasn't too bad on the first one, and I got over the pneumonia at 7. But that left on my lungs, I found out later. But the second one was when I was 11. I got it again. And at the time, I was in the flute band at the time, and I got this pneumonia, and I was put in, and I had it was about 2 months off school with it. They gave me, said, if he doesn't, one doctor came to me, so he went and got one doctor, which was 8 miles away.
Yeah.
And he sent for this other one who was further away, and he came, and he had a car. We'd never seen a car. Very rare you'd see a car in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
And when then, you know, used to see about one a year, because everybody really? Just tractors. It's just tractors. Nobody had any car. But my uncle had a car, but he's a bit rich, you know.
Yeah.
And so they sent for this second doctor. But I just remember this hazily. I see him coming in the room. And I just lay in bed, and he said to me, Dad, he said, this man have to take him to hospital. My dad said, no, because he says, I took one to hospital. That's the sister that I don't know. Apparently, they took her to hospital, and he said she never come out. So he said, if he's going to die, well, he said, if you don't take him to hospital, he's going to die within the next 24 hours. This chap is really ill, he said. My dad said, if he's going to die, he'll die here. So he kept me, and that night, he brought me up, and it all went around the neighbourhood. And I'll never forget, this is one memory, very vivid. It was all around the thing that I was ill. They were all coming to see me, all the neighbours, you know, coming in. This particular night, it brought him down, brought me down. So he dressed me and brought me down. And when he put my boots on upstairs and lifted me, and, you know, I stood up, and my boots stayed on the floor, he said, you lost that much weight. So I came down, and we had an open fire then, and this big fire, it was warm, because he's coming down, he needs heat. And all the neighbours came in, you know, local farmers came in to see me. And sat talking, about me.
Did they think that was it?
And they thought that was it.
Yeah. Oh, bless his heart.
Because that's when there are no drugs, you see.
Yeah.
I should have gone to hospital, really, but my dad said he's not going. Anyway, weeks or maybe months later, we're outside playing football in the garden, me and Hugh, and the doctor called round, you see, and he's talking to my dad. And he shouts me over, he goes, George, where are you, George? So I went over. And he says, this is the boy that you gave a day to live. He says, he's playing football. The doctor says, well, it's a marvel. And that is true, that. So, this sounds like something out of a comic book, doesn't it? You see, what do you think of your dad? I say, he was a marvellous man, my dad. Mm. I said, he thought the world of me. He had 11 of us. But now Hughie always says, my dad thought more of you than anybody. I says, you know why? Because I was always ill. And he took me for a walk, because after I flew over this and I got back on my feet again, I couldn't walk very far. Yeah. So, and I was 11 getting for 12, right? Strong man, my dad. And he just come up behind me and put me there. And he took me out and he walked me all through the fields and went for the water, because we had to get we didn't have any running water, you know.
Yeah.
No electric or running water. So we got the water from a well down the road.
Yeah.
A little stream on the side of the road. So we used to go for the water, and he would get the two and he'd go and put me down on the way back, and he took me for the water on his shoulders, and he walked around on his shoulders. I mean, I was 11, so he was a strong man.
Yeah.
And he said, he can't walk that far, so I'll take George on my shoulders. And now Hughie running beside me. And I got away with everything, you know.
Yeah.
I got away with everything. If we were doing anything naughty, I would get, you know, that. Now, don't do that again, but now Hughie would get a good crack, you know. And we had chickens, don't we? It was a little farm thing. We had chickens, loads of chickens, you know.
Yeah.
And they had like a big wire fence round to keep them in. There was hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And we used to like to feed them, you know, say to Molly, that's my sister Molly, she stood home then, you know.
Yeah.
She stayed home to look after my mum, because my mum got paralysis in her eye, so she was partially sighted. She wasn't very well, couldn't look after us, so she stayed at home, Molly, and she brought us up, really.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So we used to say to her, can we feed the chickens, so they stay. So I'd got this idea. They give us a bowl to feed the chickens each, you know, with all the meal and that they give them. But it's like a big flat dish, which it's a bigger version of a, what's them things that you throw?
A frisbee.
A frisbee, a frisbee, just like that. So I got the idea, after we'd fed the chickens, I'd start doing it as a frisbee. So, and we're like, on and then on and pick it up. It was great for doing a bit of fun with it. Then I thought, I'll try it on the chickens. So and you see it going over the chicken's head and knocking them over. And I happened to
knock them over.
Yeah, knocking them over. Oh, I'm not proud of this. I'm telling you, but I didn't kill him or anything. But, you know, frightening him.
Like,
but
Skittles.
My dad looks up and I says to Hugh, "Oh look," and we looked at the gate, because he'd made a gate, so there was one gate in and nowhere else out, just so he could go in and feed the chickens.
Yeah.
Right, about 6 foot netting wire out, so I see him, and he stood at the gate watching all this. So we couldn't get nowhere to run. We had to come up to him.
Yeah.
Now Hughie just got what they call a clash. What the hell do you think you were doing? He went, the Hughie.
Yeah.
He come to me, and you, George, you should have known better. you know. Because he didn't want to kiss, I was ill, I was too ill, he said.
Yeah.
So he didn't do it, but he went, oh, Hugh, he said, I won't mind, he's telling him, I won't mind. He said, look, it's clash B. When they slap you in the face, they call it a clash in Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, they clash it. Why they do that, I don't know, but that's what it's like. And look at my face, it's all ready. Look at George, he said, all he did was that, and don't do it again. Don't do it again. So that's the story of that. I had the most marvellous country to live in. You know, fresh air, countryside, trees to climb. I was one of the best climbers around. They call it spieling. They call it, instead of say climbing, they say spieling, that's going up.
Really?
You don't need to go up a, you know, like a lamppost.
Yeah.
I can't do it now. He's done it for years. Just put your arms around it and walk it like that.
That bears climb like that, don't they?
Yes, I mean, yeah, the same way. And that's what we used to do. Going home from school, he would say, you had that again, George. And I said, you like to went up to the top, you know. But what I didn't like was, and I was telling my friend the other day about, she says, this friend that I have, she likes porridge in the morning and I don't like porridge.
Mm.
So she know why I don't like porridge. She says, oh, I know about you. My father, he was very, very kind to me, but he liked to your porridge in the morning.
Yeah.
And in the island, they call it stibs.
Stibs?
Eat your stibs up. Now, down here, George, when you don't go to school, I hated it. Because when Molly made it, they made this, you know, with just ordinary meal, not like the packet stuff now, just meal. And they put it in milk, and they boiled the milk, how like that, and they just stirred it in. But some of it would be lumps, you know. So when she would give us, and we'd sit down, and our Hugh was, and you look at Hugh, now you and I had to eat this, and make me feel sick, Chris. It's just thinking of it. I've never, since then, since my father died,
yeah,
and my mother died, I never had porridge again, and I never will. I couldn't have porridge because I had to eat that. He made me eat it. You know? It's cruel. They shouldn't do that to children, but he did. He said, well, you see, my mum would say, oh, don't, Willie, don't, you'll have them crying, you know, you'll have them crying. So I used to cry and try and get out of it. They say, no, you have
bring
to,
on the waterworks.
You have to eat it, George, because if you don't, you won't. He was thinking he was giving me, like, medicine to him because of me being so ill. He would have let Hughie away with it.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let me away with it. I had to have them. And I hate them. I still do this minute. When I see porridge there from the supermarket this morning, and I see it, I walk past it, oats. No. It knocks me. When I see people eating it.
There's a lot
of... You know what it reminds me of, don't you? I won't say the word. It just reminds me of that. When I say that to him, why don't you like it? I said, that's what it reminds me of.
So your dad was Bill.
Yeah.
And what was your mum's name? What was she like?
Mary. Mary Weir.
And what are your memories of her?
Mostly... And she always had, because I can't remember anything else. I never seen her without she had a cotton wool pad on her left eye.
Yeah.
Because I was telling you before, she contacted years before we were born.
Yeah.
They said, I think she should have had it checked, really. But she said she got paralysis at the back of her eyes.
Wow.
And it made her partly sighted. She could see a bit with this, but not much. So she wound up, she used to just do the baking, that's about all she could do. She could bake a great bacon, baking the soda bread and all that.
Oh, no,
but she didn't do anything else.
Molly used to take a lot of
she
us.
Did the housework and looked after us, you know. That's another story. Tin bath every Saturday night.
Yeah, Saturday night, dinner, bath night.
And in front of the fire.
Yeah.
First of all, it's an open fire. And then as we get a little bit older, we got a range, you know, what they call a range.
The Arga cookers.
It's not a range, it's not the Arga, but it's with doors on it, and it boils water on one side and all that. And that was like all the time, so we got the tin bath, which they put on the side of the house, and my dad would bring the tin bath in. And it would only be about 3 or 4 foot long. We could just sit in it like this with your legs up, you know.
Yeah.
And Molly washed her hair. And washed her back, and then dried us off, and we sat on the sofa, and then we had a drink of milk before we went to bed.
So hang on a minute. If you were the second youngest,
yeah,
did that mean? And Hugh was the youngest,
yeah.
Did Hugh get the dirty water?
Well, 9 times out of 10, he did. He says that. I had to go in after George, you know.
Yeah.
And they kept boiling the water on the range, but it used to be the fire. They had a hook, you know, they call them a crane that came out. You know, where it used to be, they had like a crane on the side, it's a thing shaped like that, and it comes out and they hook it on it over the fire and then put it back again.
Yes.
But then one of the range, it was on top of the stove, the range, they call it the stove, and that was simmering all the time. So as the water cooled in this bath, poured a little bit in, and I got this like an infection because of my illness, and it used to break out in a rash. They took me to the doctor and he said, well, what we should do is have sulfur baths, bath in sulfur.
That sounds terrifying.
Well, I tell you,
get your face.
I cower when I think of it.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What was the schools like? Was it presumably just one?
Only one.
Yeah.
Tullyband Primary.
Tullyband.
Yeah. Now, the school to start it off, the school was in the corner of a farmer's field.
Yeah.
No playing ground or nothing. And it was four walls, a little porch on the front. Because it had about 20 pupils in each side. It was split in half, not by a wall. It's just a rectangular building with a door.
Yeah.
And a little porch on the front. They call it a porch for it, where we kept our clothes in and the window in. And there was a sink there, but there's no running water. We had to carry the water. There was no running water. There was a sink there to wash your hands in. That's all.
Who was your first crush?
I never forget it. And I go back to her and I can't find her because they said, did she move? I found one of them, but I don't know. The other one, I think, went to Scotland. She emigrated to Scotland.
Yeah.
One was, the first one was Jean Craig, and she had lovely long hair, red hair. It was all the go in those days, red hair, lovely red hair, you know. And Jean Craig, I was very fond of her. But the thing is, the laugh is, I was reportedly, and I'm only saying this, not trying to brag, but I was reportedly to be very good looking when I was a child.
I can believe that.
And and I used to say to Hewitt, if they all say I'm so good looking, why is it that she likes you more than
me? Oh, no. Does she like you?
He said, does she like? I said, she didn't see she likes you. But she wouldn't let me have a hug or a kiss or anything, you know. But she'd let Hewitt do it, you know. And I couldn't get over that. And
well, that thought, is well, the acid test, better. Isn't it?
Yeah, but the other one, there's a story, the other one that did fancy me, she's called, and I've heard of her since, I've not seen her, but I'm frightened of seeing her.
She's
called,
well,
the reason is, Iris Simpson, she was called.
Yeah.
And she wanted to me to see her after school, you know.
Yeah.
Like that you do. And
how old were you at this point?
I'd be about 11.
Right.
10 or 11, you know.
Yeah.
She must have had a crush on me because of what happened. Because we're home from school, so we're coming home from school, Hughie and I, and down they come, down comes Jean Craig, because Jean Craig lived on the same road as me, near to me, I should say. But Iris Simpson, she lived further on, she was with her. And the two of them, and they started on me, and they said, "You didn't come yesterday after school. Well, my friend I sit with is called Jerry McAllister. I go to his grave every time I'm there. He died.
Yeah.
But he used to go and see him, you see. He was another good-looking lad. And he must have told him that I must have made a date that I was to see Iris, and he used to see his girlfriend.
Yeah.
But that day, I didn't know anything about it. He never told me anything about it, and I didn't turn up. So she blamed me for letting her down. So she said, "After school, I'm going to get you." And I said, "This was in school, in the desk, you know, and get you after you let me down." I didn't let you down. I know nothing about it. And we got out, and I'm going home, and I'm sowing these sticks at the trees to get the things, Huey and I. And all of a sudden, they turned up. "What did I say I was going to do?" I said, "What are you going to do, Iris? You know, she's a big lady." And he said, I'm going to give you a good licking. They call it a licking. That's like a hitting.
Yeah.
So she took her school bag off. You know, we all have satchels.
Yeah.
And she set about with the satchel. So I wrestled her off, and I fell on it. And then doesn't Jean, Craig, the one who I fancied, starts and helps as well. So we're two of them. He was, leave her, George, alone, leave her. And they were hitting me with these bags, you know. And then Jean started on me. I thought, "Indy, good, I like you, and you're giving me a good licking," as they call it, a licking.
That's yeah.
They say that today. They say, when you hit on you, "Oh, I'll give her a good licking."
So there's there's the two girls, both of whom you had a crush on, are both beating hell out of you.
The hell out of me, yeah. So I couldn't stand it. So I got up, and I'd push her away, and somehow I managed, I hit her on the face, and I blacked her eye.
Oh, my God.
Well, talk about trouble. She started crying, and I'm going to tell my dad. That's her dad. Yeah. So Jean Craig, she runs on home and tells her father, Jimmy Craig. And I'm like, "What are we going to do now, Hugh?" He said, "Have you seen her eye? We're going up, she's coming up, you know."
Oh, God.
And she lived in that Moss Side. She lived in Moss Side, so she's further on. Mm. And this Moss Side, her family had a bit of a reputation, you know, a bit like the Weirs, they've got a bit of scrap and that.
Yeah.
And I thought, what am I going to do? So Jimmy Craig, he set about, "What have you done to Iris Simpson?" I said, it was a mistake. I didn't mean to hit her, you know. And then another farmer, she told him, another one, he come. So eventually, they told me dad. One of them went home and told me dad.
Yeah.
And I got to tell it off when I got in. He didn't say anything.
Yeah.
But he went round to her house to see Simpson, her father, Frank Simpson. And I says, "What did you do?" He says, "I just says to him, if she was hitting him with a bag, he did the right thing, and I'm not going to hit him or anything for it."
Yeah.
She said, he says, "If you don't like it, you know what to do," my dad said, because my dad, he wouldn't have touched my dad, he was too big a man for him, you know.
Yeah.
A chap like yourself, maybe a bit taller than you, and you were tall. He's a big man. He was a pig killer in real life. He killed pigs for people, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he sorted this out. So when I'm out over in Ireland, I sees this lady, Iris, her niece. I met her.
Really?
I went to church one day, to the churchyard to see me family grave. And she was there. She says, are you George Weir? I said, do you know Iris Simpson? I said, do I know Iris Simpson? She says, she's my auntie. Oh, she says, don't tell her you met me, will you? She said, are you the one who hit her in the eye? All these years, are you the one who broke blacked her eye? I said, yeah. My nephew was there. Robert, he knew nothing about it. This one named Scott, but he was with me. Said, what's all this, George, about Iris? So this girl said, she says she would like to see it. I says, no, I'm not falling for that one. She said, shall I tell her? I said, you can tell her that you've seen me, but I'm not going to, because I'm so ashamed of it. She said, she's all right with it now, you know. She's all right with it.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, she says she's all right with it now. You're going to get out there, you're going to go into the barn to meet her, and it'll be like Goodfellas, you'll get whacked.
I know. Why are you going up and saying, this is what it's like, George?
Yeah.
So that's the story of school.
Yeah.
But
how did you end up in Manchester? Was it the whole family that came?
When I left school, at 14 and a half, and I worked for that from November. That was on the 29th of November. I was 14 and a half.
Yeah.
What, that would be 49 or 48, 49, something like that. And I had this, my two brothers, well, one of my brothers was definitely, he was working in Manchester.
Yeah.
So he'd get going home for holidays and we used to talk about it. And I said, I wouldn't mind going, you know. And, but my mum said, well, I've got no money to send you, you know. So our Bill said, that's the one who's 10 years older than me, he said he had a good job. So he said, I'll come for you. I'll take you there. So he did. But in the meantime, I started working for the farmer who married Greta. Alfred, I worked
for the farmer who married Greta.
Stuck in peat, yeah.
Yeah.
Doing his peat. He was cutting the peat at the time, and I stacked the peat for him from late February,
yeah,
right through, because it takes quite a job. So I worked for him, and he gave me £14 for the 2-3 weeks I worked for him. So that was £14 towards me.
Wow.
I know Bill put the rest to, but then my uncle came and he'd a thrashing mill, a thresher, you know, a portable one, and he takes it to the farmer and they farm it, the thresher. So he was in the area and we used to go here and I, that was our day out when he was in, we went to see him and he was our uncle.
Mm.
So he says to me, he did the back of the thresher, he did the seed bit, the men did, they put it in and all, and he did the seed. And he was talking to us and he said, I believe you're going to England with your Willie's coming for you. They called him Willie. I said, yeah. I said, I'm trying to. Well, he said, tell you what, here's something to be going, and they give me a £10 note.
I come home
and told my mum, £10 note, and that, you know, it's a lot of money. So I went to London, so I nearly got worked my own fare there.
Yeah.
When I came to England, I had nothing.
No, it was just you that come out on your own.
Yeah, and they had a flat when I came to Ireland. Agnes was there.
Yeah.
Agnes was there. She worked in England as well. She was in the sewing trade, you know, a seamstress, and she worked in Manchester. So she was there, and they had a flat. And I went there and I stayed at the flat and worked there and got this job as in an art room. Doing art, painting.
You did?
Yeah, that's what I started out as.
What, like as in painting and decorating?
No. Painting flowers.
Really?
In the factory, they made these flowers, which I went to do after anyway. They made these flowers and they decorated the mirrors and that with them. And they also painted, you know, The crinoline ladies on mirrors, you see them sometimes, a mirror with a crinoline lady and walking like that.
Yes.
Used to draw them on a mirror. That's what I did for about a year or less, maybe less. But I wound up working in the factory because I liked the idea of the factory.
Yeah.
I liked it better than the because I was working with five women and they were all painters, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
What an interesting thing to do, I suppose. You do see mirrors and all sorts like that with stuff on them.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I did. Yeah. Crinoline ladies, isn't it? Crinoline ladies.
That's quite an amazing first job to have.
Yeah. And also, so I went into the factory, see, and we had made mirrors, obviously. And on the mirrors, the backing of the mirror, they put, in timber, they put like a crescent on the top. Crescent. And on that crescent, the chap in the factory made these little flowers.
Yeah.
Call them Barbola flowers, but they weren't. They were pretend Barbola.
Right.
Barbola is a name. is a jewellery item that's very expensive, I believe.
Yeah.
When it's made, because it's made of special stuff. But they made it with their own brew stuff, and then they stuck these flowers on. And when they come in to me, they were just like the colour of putty.
Yeah.
I put the things in, the little green, yellows, reds, all. And then it went back into the factory, and the mirror was put on it, and they sold.
It sounds like you enjoyed your work.
I did, I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed the factory better because it was with the lads then, you see. I was working with the lads. So they said, well, could you think you could work in the room where they make these flowers that you painted?
Yeah.
So I went in and the chap, he was retiring. So I went and he showed me what to do and I started. I went on from there and I worked at it for 10 or 11 years. Making them, yeah. Met
and
a nice girl there and had a nice affair with a girl there.
Oh, did you?
Before I met Sheila, yeah.
So what was her name?
Barbara.
Did you give her a black eye?
No. But the laugh is,
probably,
she was
engaged. You learned your lesson, they're good.
It's going to come of it, Chris, because she was engaged.
So it wasn't a fair.
You're an awful girl. She said, I know, I'm engaged, really.
Yeah.
And she wound up marrying him, but I used to go over at a weekend.
Yeah.
Went dancing with her to the Ritz.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, the one near the palace?
Yeah. The Ritz one Saturday, and the next Saturday, or maybe Friday, go to the plaza.
Did you ever get seen by her fiancé?
No, because he lived in Bury. No, that to the end of
the
miles away.
You're a bad lad.
Yeah. Oh, wow. You know who was the manager of the plaza when we were there?
Who?
Jimmy Savile. I met Jimmy Savile.
Oh, my God.
Because he used to come over talking to us. His blonde hair. You're right, you know.
Yeah?
Yeah. But a smart-looking fellow, though. He was manager of the plaza, you know.
Well.
Man, not, that's one thing I'm not very... I used to think it was great, you know, when I saw him on the television. I remember him.
Yeah.
To Sheila. He said, I remember him as well, because Sheila was with me as well.
Yeah.
And she said, you remember we used to see him in the plaza? But now I wouldn't walk to the end of the road to see him.
Obviously not.
Happened.
When did, after you got your bad lad bit out of the way, how did that end? Did that just...
Just fizzled out, yeah. I think she decided to leave, as I remember. It fizzled out.
Well, you couldn't have trusted someone like that.
No.
Because,
No, I couldn't. I used to say, you know, it's not right, you shouldn't do that. Well, I want to.
you shouldn't do that.
And
now give us a kiss.
When I say, you know, when we're doing this little job, and they had like a little room to do this, because it had to have a burner in it,
yeah.
Like a gas burner. And this gas burner warmed a tank of water.
Yeah.
And this tank had like a door on it, and that's where it kept me stuff. I made this brew up of Scotch glue, break it all up and put whiting in it, and made like a putty, and that's what they made the flowers out of. And then I put them on a block and squeezed it, and then cut them off, and stuck them onto the mirrors,
right.
And onto the mirrors. And then they were painted by Barbara. She did it. But the thing was, from the ladies' toilet, you could through into my place in the back, because I was a little bit off the main thing.
Yeah.
And she used to go to the toilet and come out and say, hello, John. And I'd have a little... And she'd go back in again.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. Nothing...
Obviously,
not
no, no,
but,
no. It's just a place of work, for heaven's sake.
And, I'll see you on Friday night, or I'll see you on Saturday night.
Yeah.
Because he's going for a drink. So I said, you know, you're awful to him. She said, I know, but I like you. Oh, she called me her Adonis, that was it.
Her Adonis?
She used to say, and she called me her Adonis, because I'd, then at the time, not like now, I had a great head of hair.
Yeah.
And it's not like one of the Everly brothers, you know. Me and Hughie looked like the Everly brothers, used to say that. They looked like the Everly brothers, you know, the curls and that.
Yeah.
And there was no white, it was just mixing, you know. But I had a good head of hair, and she'd say, where's my Adonis? It's just like a Greek, you know, with all this.
Yeah.
Crap, you know. And just, I'm not bragging on him, but that's the truth.
Yeah.
You asked me, I tell you the truth. I say it to Sarah, and said, Grandad, you must have had some life when you were. I did have some life, I tell you.
So after that fizzled out, and it sounds like she went.
Yeah, I think she, yeah,
so after that fizzled out, at some point you met the real love of your life, didn't you?
Ooh, did I? Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it's lovely. I met her at the plaza.
Yeah.
And we danced that night, two or three dances, and she was very small, my wife, very small. And
little Diddy.
Yeah, little Sheila. And we made it, I brought her home. We got on the bus and I brought her home up to where we lived in Harper Ray. And then I walked and got the bus back to Salford, because I lived in Salford at the time.
Yeah.
And dropped off and made a date for the next Saturday to go dancing.
Yeah.
But I got come for the date, but the bus broke down on Rochdale Road. And they're waiting for the bus to come. And I turned to see to the bus and I was late.
Mm.
So she came out and waited, because I was meeting her at the end of her road, you know, not at her door, meeting at the end of her road.
Yeah.
Which is just there on... Near Manning's Club, you know, where you know where Manning's.
Oh, the Embassy Club.
The Embassy Club.
Yeah.
The street just before there, she lived there. called Sherwood Street.
Yeah.
She lived there. So I used to meet her at the end there. That was where I used to meet her, but I didn't. And her friend come, and she was going dancing. She said, "What are you doing?" She said, "I'm waiting for George. Do you know that folk I met last night?" And, "Oh," I said, "him, the big fella." He called me the big fella. I wasn't a big fella. But yeah. He said, "But he's not coming up." He said, "Well, I'm going dancing. Are you coming with me at Bellevue?" So she gets on the bus and goes to Bellevue with... when I saw her next at the thing, I'm moving, I said, "Where were you?" She said, "Where were you? I waited for you. I waited for nearly half an hour for you. You let me down." I said, "I didn't, see. I was that bus that broke down. You know, the bus that broke down." She said, "It must have passed because I went to Bellevue." So that was it then. So
did you think that was it all over?
And I was very upset about it. But then the next week I saw
her. So you're upset? You must have liked her.
Yeah, I did right away. Because And next week I saw her and I said, "This time I'll..." So we made a date and went to the pictures. Remember? Yeah. And that was it, the start of it. The love of my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There she is. That's recently. That's just before she died.
Yeah. She is a little ditty.
I was 20. I was 22 when I married.
Yeah.
So how many years is that?
That's pushing 60.
It's pushing 60 years.
Goodness
me. See, Chris, you get used to a person when you're doing that, though. You get used to it.
Of course you do.
Yeah. But you only get 17 years for murder, don't you?
No, I didn't. Listen, you're saying that as a joke, but, you know, I can, you know...
Right, listen, I can't say too much because I just start breaking up.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's 3 years now. It's just over 3 years. 3 years and... Because it was in November. November's been a very big year for me. I was born in that... on that year.
Yeah,
Sheila was born 10 days... She's 10 days older than me, so I was her toy boy.
Really. Oh, I see.
Yeah, 10 days.
She was a sugar mummy.
And then when I had Paul, we had him on the night. His birthday's the 19th of July.
Yeah.
It takes some time to do it that way, Chris. You ought to try it. And he was born, that's the 19th of November.
Mm.
And she died on the 18th of November. Yeah, it was a different date, but all November. So November's a big, big...
It's like everything in...
Everything that's happened, it's all in November.
Yeah.
So that's the story.
And tell me about your children. You had kids, didn't you?
I got two lovely children. I had two lovely children. Paul, born on her birthday, like I say, on Sheila's birthday.
Yeah.
The 19th of November. And what a boy he's turned out to be. Never been in trouble in his life. Just likes cars.
Yeah.
He does old cars up, you know. And that's his job. He's a paint sprayer.
Yeah.
And French polisher. He does French polishing as well.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. And he touched my car up when I bought it. There was some room, so he put it all in. That's what he does. Yeah, he's very good. And man, of course, my daughter, just unreplaceable.
Yeah.
She thinks the world of me. Sometimes on the Skype, when we're saying, she, you see the tears on her face when she's saying, "See you, Dad, see you." It's the tears on her face. But, you know, she, that's what I mean. You talk about a family. I have a family. And this Paul here, Paul and Rose, my daughter-in-law, and those grandchildren, but my daughter-in-law, and her Paul, he comes every day of the week to see me.
Does
after
he?
After work, yeah.
Good lad.
Comes here every night.
You've done well there. Yeah. And I tell you what, I think you've done well with your family. It sounds like you're sort of still... It sounds like even though you've lost Sheila, it sounds like you're surrounded by people who love you.
Absolutely.
Oh, George Weir, thank you very, very much.
So that's enough as a waffle on, but there you go.
And that was George. I know I say it every week, but he's my new favourite. Lovely, lovely man. As you'll have just heard, this podcast is about sharing some fantastic life stories. But there are well over a million chronically lonely people in the UK who have no one to share their stories with. If you'd like to know more about ways to change this, then please go online and visit campaigntoendloneliness.org and find out how together we can make loneliness a thing of the past. Thanks again goes to George, and also thanks to Acast for hosting this show. See you next time.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.